Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
All right, welcome to the Side Action. It's Tuesday, February 19th. I am Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. So any exciting things happen over this weekend?
No, not really. Went out to dinner on Friday night.
Nice.
Some Italian. Okay. I'm off keto, so I'm divulging in the Italian restaurants on this break. Then just watching a lot of college hoops over the weekend. Got some things done around the place, and then just vegged a little bit yesterday.
Cool.
How about you?
Well, as I told you, I went 0-5 in my bets this week.
Ouch.
Worst week since we started this, so that was a kick in the teeth. And, of course, the ones that I would have bet on the weekend won, so it was one of those weeks. I just kind of let it go. Did hit ice skating over the weekend, you know. Chicago's a great place to do some outdoor winter activities, and Sunday was a beautiful ice skating day, and then it just came down again. The snow has been pounding us lately, hasn't it, Action?
Yeah, I hope that it can continue snowing in Colorado, my destination of travel this week, and get some skiing in.
You're going to have some serious powder out there.
Yeah, were you at the Ribbon, the Maggie Daly Park, skating?
No, we went to our local place, Warren Park. It's up in, you know, basically way up north, kind of like Devon and Western. I love that place. It's just been going there for years. It's a very diverse crowd, and actually it was kind of light for Sunday. The rinks closed on Monday, so had to get my last one in. I can go down to Maggie Daly or Millennium, you know, up until like mid-March, I think.
Oh, but this one closes early, huh?
It does. I'm not sure why, but whatever. So, so not too much excitement on this weekend, but let's roll into the episode. Let's review the outline. We don't really have a legislative update, but an informational update where we were fighting the man this week. We've got our head-to-head segment review from last week. We'll touch on the AAF, some interesting developments going on there. Then we'll jump deep into hoops, which is our bulk of our episode this week, and talk about the spots we're eyeing after our metrics, as well as we're going to go do some head-to-head stuff on that college basketball later. The NBA All-Star recap will be important. I know you had a big winner there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll talk about the NHL first period over stuff. You've got a little bit more information. And we're back to soccer, the Champions League.
Yeah, Juventus back in action tomorrow on a Wednesday afternoon. And I've got an angle for that game.
All right. I love it. I love it. So first things first, informational update is really just kind of a thing. I was kind of dozing off, watching a little TV, and then Action sends me a text that on Bet Online there was a, it seems to be there's an opportunity here. Bradley versus Drake for tomorrow. They're showing Bradley as a 115-point underdog.
Yeah.
Jump on it.
Epic. Yeah, I was doing some overnight look-ahead action work last night, some handicapping, and I was honestly logging in to bet on Drake because, as we talked about last week, they're on a serious tear, 8-2 ATS in their last 10.
That's right.
And I noticed that they were 115-point favorites against Bradley for tonight's action. And I said, wow, that's crazy. Let me see if I can hit that and see if it works.
That's
so
right.
Started small, a little bit of a low limit, and then it accepted Bradley plus 115. I was like, ooh, let me hit this
again.
So I kind of doubled my bet and ended up hitting that like five times. And then I thought to myself, better text Wags and
that's
tell
right.
him Bradley plus 115. And went to bed thinking that I had an easy money winner.
I know, me too.
Next night. You know, because you and I had both heard the story about FanDuel paying out the mistake to the Denver bettor
That's
earlier
right.
this year
That's right.
when they kicked a last-second field goal to beat their opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that BetOnline surely would take the same approach for this mistake.
Sure. I put in five units, which is huge for me. I was excited trying to get all my money back from last week. And we woke up this morning, and Action's like, oh, they cleared my bets. I'm like, what? And I went back in, and I checked it, and I was pissed. And so I decided to tweet at Paulie Howard and Mitch Moss in the morning. They didn't mention it. And then you also hooked in the guys from BetOnline. And he kind of put us down. He's like, clearly, rule number 22 states that, you know, this clear and obvious mistake and typo. So we just wipe it out. We're like, there's no notification. There's no email. They just wiped it clean.
Yeah, that was the biggest beef I had with it. I totally agree with Dave Mason that it was clear and obvious. Mm-hmm. Obviously, no team is going to win a game by 115.
Right.
But basketball. The fact that they just wiped our bets away and there was no message, no notification, mm-hmm. and no record of them whatsoever.
Right.
It was clear to me that they were trying to pull a fast one and just slide this under the rug and that's move right. on with their lives. And that was not cool with me. So I was tried to call them out this morning and got a brief response from Bet Online, but mm. that was about it. And I think it's behind us now.
What we were saying is that via text is that, you know, one of the things is, let's say I make a mistake and hit my max limit bet. Mm-hmm. Whoops.
Yeah, they don't a typo.
They don't, because I've actually almost done that before.
Sure.
I
mean,
because I press the wrong button on the app on my phone and it'll go max bet instead of submit or something, and it'll go to like 10,000, which I don't have, thankfully. Mm. But I'm sure if I had the money, they would take it gladly and not give it back. So it's one of these things that I get. It's, you know, nobody's going to win by 115 points in basketball. It was probably the vig, right?
Yeah.
The juice
yeah.
that they were trying to put in there. But hey, man, we took advantage of it, and we should at least get something back. But
yeah, well, and the other point I wanted to make was, who decides what's clear and obvious?
Right.
Like, for example, what if that spread, so ultimately Drake settled in at a 4-point favorite.
4 points,
what if that was 11.5 or 15, for example, mm-hmm. and you and I were thinking, oh, great value on Bradley.
Sure.
Jump in and hit that 5 times. Are they going to avoid those bets?
Right. I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. It's us against the offshore guys, but we try to stake our claim. At least we try to put it out there.
Yeah. Maybe we'll win the next one.
That's right. So let's go over the recap from last week. Basically, all college basketball again. It's going to be a lot for us going forward. We'll start off with Penn State at Purdue. Actually, that was a Saturday game. That Sunday game, it's okay. Penn State at Purdue. Purdue was a 13-point favorite at home. Well, as you stated in your handicap, Penn State played them tough. Although Purdue was out there to like a 17-point lead yeah. at one time. And I actually had to go someplace, so I flipped it off. And then when I flipped it back, what I was mad about this game, not only to lose in the head-to-head, because the final score was 76-64, but I had put in my fifth bet of the week as the Purdue-Penn State under at 139.5.
Oh, no.
And the last free throw was the dagger that put them at the 140. And not only did they lose the head-to-head bet for me, but I lost the bet on the over.
Wow, by a half point.
Exactly.
Damn.
What are you gonna
well,
do?
Purdue started out horribly in this game, turned the ball over on like 10 straight possessions, mm-hmm. it seemed like, and Penn State jumped out to a healthy lead in the first half. It must be noted, Trevion Williams, the Purdue freshman big man, was ill and only played 2 minutes, so mm-hmm. I think that was a big factor.
Yep.
But Matt Harms stepped up in his absence. He had 18 points and 6 rebounds, and Carson Edwards really turned it on after halftime. He scored 15 of his 21 points in the second frame, and Purdue pulled away. But thankfully, Penn State kept it close, and I got the cover.
That's right. Your guy Edwards was hitting some jumpers from deep.
Man, I mean, when he gets hot, he's just so fun to watch.
Wow. He is just hitting those in the guys' faces. He's a really, really good shooter. The next game is Iowa State at Kansas State. This was a Saturday tilt. Kansas State was 1-point favorites at home. In this one, I was actually all over Iowa State for the revenge factor, although I think that we didn't really factor in, perhaps. Did we factor in the injury into this one?
To Wade? No, I was unaware of that injury to Wade until the broadcast started.
Okay. Yeah, Wade had gotten injured in the last game, and he was kind of questionable. He didn't end up playing. So, you know, Iowa State came out, and they were running and gunning, doing what I thought that they could do, and they basically won the game kind of easily, 78-64.
Yeah, Wade actually did play.
Oh, did he?
The first 30 minutes, he hobbled off with like 11 minutes left. And as soon as that happened, I knew that K-State had no chance to win that game.
Right.
But I was impressed by Iowa State. They shot the lights out. Mm-hmm. Wigginton was hot from the outside, 5 3-pointers and 23 points. And the freshman Chicagoan, Talen Horton Tucker, was hot too, 6 3-pointers and 20 points.
Nice.
We talked about it a few weeks past. I mean, this team really plays well. They've got some guards who can shoot the lights out. They're super athletic. And Steve Prohm is a good coach. I think it's a team that I'm going to be looking to back come March.
I really like them in the tournament, too, for two reasons, because they can actually kind of flex styles. Unlike Kansas State, who's a really good team, although I always say they're overrated, they have a great defensive team, but they can't really transition styles. You know, they can't play at Iowa State's pace. They have to play at their pace, and that's kind of what happened in this game. Whereas I think Iowa State can actually dial it down if they have to, and then obviously they have the guys who can shoot, who can open that game up really wide. So The next game was in the SoCon. We went off the map a little bit. We had UNC Greensboro at Wofford. This was supposed to be a big showdown game. Wofford was a 10-point favorite at home, but man, my Terriers are playing ball now. They are really playing ball. They just destroyed this Greensboro team, which actually lost earlier in the week to Furman, so they lost back-to-back, and Wofford took them out 80-50. I mean, they just were pummeling this team. What did you see in that game?
Yeah, I didn't actually get a chance to watch this one. I kind of forgot it was on in the early evening, but I kind of feel like you baited me into this one, to be honest with you.
I got to do that to keep ahead of you.
We'll call it even. I know I got you a few times this year, but man, Wofford just ripped them. They were up 36-30 at halftime, and then right after the break, they went on an 18-4 run and just blew the game wide open, and as you mentioned, ended up winning by 30.
Yeah, Wofford's one of those teams I'm going to be watching in the tournament. They are actually floating up in like Lenardi's line. I think they're up to 8 or 9 in his bracketology. So,
wow.
Yeah, they're going to be a team that nobody's going to want to play. I think they're going to make the tournament even if they don't win the SoCon. They're in the top 30 in KenPom. That net ratings thing, they're also pretty high. So I think they're just a great basketball team. So we'll see what happens, but watch out for them come March. The last game was the Zags at San Diego. Your Toreros. San Diego was getting 17 points at home. So what happened in this one?
Well, my handicap was spot on.
It was.
The Toreros got up for the Zags, as they always do. And catching 17 points at home, they were covering throughout the game. Mm-hmm. And almost took it to them in the first half. They were tied 30-30 at halftime. But Rui Hachimura kind of took over in the beginning of that second half and scored 16 in the second half. Plus 10 rebounds, and Gonzaga kind of turned up the defense a little bit in the second half, and they ended up pulling away and winning by 12.
One of the things I saw a little bit in this game is I'm just thinking how good the West Coast Conference is. Mm-hmm. Even though the Toreros aren't going to probably make the tournament, I think this San Diego team could beat a lot of the Pac-12 teams.
Oh, yeah, they already have.
Yeah, and I know that the league is in general has dominated the Pac-12, but it's just every night, even though the Zags are dominating a lot of their competition, they're playing pretty good teams, whereas, the Pac-12 is just garbage. So, I don't know. Maybe there's going to be a shakeup.
And to add to that, a lot of people are downplaying the Zags, too, because they're in this conference. But they're beating these opponents by an average of 30 points this year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, San Diego kept it close, but their winning average in conference is over 30.
That's right. Hey, I like them. I like that team. Let's go into the AAF light touch. The first thing I'll talk about before you talk about the games themselves is that the AAF almost missed payroll in week two, apparently. So there was kind of an emergency infusion of capital. I think it was the owner of the Florida Panthers or something like that, who was also somehow involved with the league. He had to come up with a big chunk of cash to basically make sure people got paid. Otherwise, this new Alliance of American Football almost died on the table.
Well, I wonder if Trent Richardson could use some of the cash that Mike Colts paid him to help out his brethren.
Yeah, exactly. Help a brother out, right? So what do you got up here? You got something here.
Well, I was trying to log in and catch this San Antonio and Orlando game on Sunday and quickly realized that I can't get CBS Sports Network on my streaming service for the life of me. So
I gotcha.
I'm SOL when the games are on CBS Sports. But I did do some reading, and I saw San Antonio actually came out pretty hot and was leading the game early in the first half. And then late in the game, it was tied 29-29 when Woodside, the San Antonio quarterback, threw a pick six. And Keith Reeser took it back to the house, and they ended up going up by 6, 35-29, which still would have got me a push, but the damned two-point conversion rule. And, of course, Orlando makes a two-point conversion, and they end up covering the 6 points, winning by 8.
This is the only game that went over, and we talked about that last week. This is a Spurrier team, so that's obviously they're kind of running and gunning. The other games were really low-scoring, like 24-12 and some kind of garbage games. So, so far, I think the home teams, this was the only, were they a road team in this one?
Orlando was the road team. Yeah, I think they were the only road team to cover
this
week.
Right, so it's like 7-1 so far for the home teams, and then almost all of them are under except for the Orlando. So
yeah, no spreads out for week three so far. I imagine that may be due to the unknown in terms of games actually occurring. But
exactly.
If any spreads come out, maybe we'll post something on Twitter over the weekend.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into the big chunk, college hoops. Let's recap. Looks like we had a big week in our picks, 7-1. That's awesome.
Yeah, I graded the Purdue total on 140, which pushed. Mm-hmm. And then Virginia and Virginia Tech, we had actually given out 124 on Monday night, and that number was never available. I think it closed at 120 or so, and the game ended at 122. So it was right in there, but unavailable number.
Nice. You've got Iowa's surging, and actually they have a big game against Maryland coming up here. Mm-hmm. So they're winning 9 of their last 11. Oh, that's actually excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Two huge wins, one over Michigan, and then the second one, not quite so huge, over Ohio State. But did you catch the game-winning shot that Iowa hit on Saturday night off the glass
off,
in the corner?
Off the corner of the backboard. I think he didn't call glass there. He just kind of threw it up there. But, yeah, that was an amazing shot. That didn't get him the cover, but it got him the money line winner.
Yeah, obviously. Money line winner and a deflating loss for poor Rutgers. They've been playing pretty well themselves, covering a lot of games, and are getting a big number tomorrow night at Michigan State, which may pique my interest a little.
All right. Yeah, Iowa's got some sharpshooters on that team. They've hit a lot of big jumpers. So they're one of those teams you can watch in March, too, because they can shoot. A couple big injuries. We talked about Dean Wade. You know, I had mentioned, you know, actually, I kind of knew that he was walking around in a boot. I guess I should have said that in a handicap.
Could
have
mentioned that to me.
Keep that on the DL. But you got to see what's going to happen with him. And then Nick Ward, that's a huge injury for Michigan State. He's got a hairline fracture in his hand. Is he going to be back for the tournament, or is he done?
So I've been reading that he's going to be reevaluated on a week-by-week basis, but there's no timeline for his return. I would doubt he comes back for the tournament, but you never know. Even if he does come back, he's likely going to be limited.
Right.
So poor Michigan State. They lost Langford and now Nick Ward adding to it.
Yeah, they had the talent to do something this year, and it's just a shame that usually they're kind of gritty and they kind of earn their wins, but this year they're going to have to do it again, even though they had the talented team, and now they're going to be back to backups. We'll maybe touch on that in the head-to-head.
Yeah, Ward is a huge loss for them. He's their second-leading scorer and third-leading rebounder. And just one of their big guy inside, and he's going to be a huge loss. Also, I didn't put on here, but I want to add LeGerald Vick for Kansas has left the team for personal reasons. So adding on to the Azubuike loss, and Da Silva has been ruled out ineligible for the year. This Kansas team is just in bad shape going forward.
I can't understand. You know, Lardy and Palm, those guys I follow for bracketology, they still have Kansas on the three line. And maybe it's from how they've done so far this season, but I can't see this team being in a top four seed personally. But we'll see how it shakes out. You know, they've won that league so many years in a row. I guess people just assume it's going to happen. And Bill Self is a pretty good coach in the league. But I agree with you, man. That's a team I'm going to look and definitely fade.
Yeah, going down the stretch, the Big 12 is going to be tight. Kansas State and Iowa State are certainly the leaders. But Kansas is up there, too. And it's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top in that conference.
That's right. Let's jump into some of our metrics. Just a light touch. We've got my Ken Palm versus AP review. It's kind of similar to last week, to be honest with you. The quote-unquote overrated teams are Marquette, which actually dropped to 11 in the AP, but they're still outside the top 25 on Ken Palm. It's kind of amazing. Kansas State, as I mentioned, they're 23 in the AP, but they're 32 in Ken Palm. I think it's mostly their offense. Mm-hmm. The underrated teams, Auburn, can't back this team, but they're 16th in Ken Pom, but they're all the way down at 28 in the AP. And Mississippi State, you know, they're just kind of like that team that kind of hovering in that same zone. They're 23rd in Ken Pom, but they're 30th in the AP. So I don't know. I mean, I'll start looking a little bit deeper in teams within the top 25 that are kind of overrated, underrated, and you can kind of see some movement there. But anyways, as far as the against the spread teams, it hasn't changed that much. There have been some teams that lost. I mean, Nevada's 8-1, the class of this group. They're obviously destroying the Mountain West Conference. Kentucky's 9-2, despite losing to LSU last week. Obviously, they destroyed Tennessee. We didn't talk about that, but that was a great one on our side. Kansas State is 9-3, so we'll see how the Wade injury affects them. They have just been covering for the most part. Washington has lost their last two, but they are still 7-2. Purdue is 8-3, and Sparty's 8-3. They kind of picked themselves up after losing some. And I guess your Drake Bulldogs are 8-2.
Yeah, they closed as 4.5-point favorites on Saturday against Valparaiso. A lot of people probably got in at 5, but did dip under that last number. The game ended on 5, so I graded that as another win and put them at 8-2 ATS.
Gotcha. Any differences in your action index?
Not a ton of major shakeups this week, save for Kentucky and Tennessee swapping spots. Dukes 1, Gonzaga 2, followed by Michigan State, Virginia, and North Carolina. Kentucky comes in at 6, and we didn't talk about it, but quite the impressive performance against Tennessee on Saturday night. PJ Washington inside just was dominant, and Grant Williams had no answer for him.
Yeah, Reed Travis also helped out. He's muscle in the middle, and they just couldn't get it done. It was actually quite impressive, and I think Kentucky getting that loss to LSU gave him a little extra motivation.
At the same time, I'm not going to downgrade Tennessee too much, but it certainly hurts their chances to win the national championship in my mind, at least when I'm filling out that bracket. That loss is going to resonate with me come tournament time.
Yeah, exactly. But it also means, you know, LSU, they're pretty good. They're actually tied for first in the conference, so they're kind of flying under the radar. They're not in your index yet, but they're definitely a good team. And we talked about Waters, you know, their point guard. He definitely makes a difference. Looks like Nevada ticked up a little bit. They're up to 15. I know you're not giving them love, but I do think they're going to do something. I mean, it's basically the same team as last year, so we'll see.
Yeah, quite the same team. They are without the point guard, Drew. Very similar team, but they still don't have the big man inside, and they're going to be relying on three-pointers, which is always a detriment in March, unless they stay hot, which is certainly plausible, too.
That's right.
Rounding out the top 10 is Michigan at 8, Purdue 9, and Texas Tech has moved into that top 10 this week. Behind their solid defense, they've actually overtaken Virginia as the number one rated defense in KenPom. So reclaimed their top spot, which they held earlier in the season.
Well, they're actually up to 65 offensively. That doesn't sound impressive, but they were way down before. They were almost 100 a few weeks ago. So, yeah, they're getting better. Okay, let's look at the spots you're eyeing this week. And looks like you're starting right away with the orange.
Yeah, this is a spot that is just purely motivational, situational, schedule-oriented.
Okay.
Louisville is just in a funk right now, and they're playing at the Carrier Dome on Wednesday night. I've got Syracuse looking like a one-point favorite in the look-ahead line. The total is going to be 133.5. And Louisville, this team just needs some sort of psychiatrist.
Oh, yeah.
After the collapse against Duke last week, they follow that up with another near collapse at home on Saturday against Clemson, and the pressure just seems to be getting to them. And by pressure, I mean ball pressure. They gave up two huge leads and almost lost that one too, and blew the cover on Saturday against Clemson.
Yeah, they did win the game, so thankfully. But yeah, they blew that big game against Duke and then Clemson. They're a really good team. You know, they're a really good basketball team, but it looks like late game situations and maybe the pressure defense is going to be something you got to watch out for in March. Syracuse is a different team at home. They play that zone. I don't know. We'll see. I was originally going to go with Louisville in this game, just kind of, you know, out the gut, but then I kind of checked out their performance, and they're kind of mediocre at home, let alone the slide that you're talking about. And, you know, Syracuse is just one of those teams I don't trust going against them at home.
Yeah,
basically.
Well, and looking at their schedule, after this Louisville game, they close the season with Duke, North Carolina, Wake Forest, Virginia, and then Clemson.
Wow.
So looking at their 17-8 right now, they're trying to battle for that tournament spot, and I think they're going to view this game against Louisville as a must-win. And add to that, too, they thrive at turning opponents over, ninth, and forcing turnovers. And as we mentioned, this Louisville team struggles against pressure defense, turning it over 149th ranked in the nation. So I'm going to take Syracuse as a one-point favorite in this one.
Okay. I actually, you know, I think that's a good idea, especially with the short number there. Okay, we'll save a couple for the head-to-head. The next one you've got is in the American Athletic Conference. You got Central Florida at Cincinnati. Cincinnati are 6.5-point favorites at home, but you're looking at the total of 128 being under. Why do you like that on Thursday?
Yeah, this game jumped out at me as I was looking at the lines this week. And the total on KenPom appears to be around 128. And these two teams are extremely slow. UCF is 310th in pace, and Cincinnati is 342. And both of them played very solid defense, too. UCF is ranked 57th in defensive efficiency, and Cincinnati checks in at 35. So I'm looking at these two teams playing a rock fight. And
absolutely.
As Sunday morning, we tweeted out another Cincinnati under, and I expect this one's going to stay under on Thursday night as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is just a rough and tumble battle. I mean, they've got the, you know, 7-footer in Central Florida, and then Cincinnati just plays you rough and tough, and that's what they do. So I can see that under for sure. The next game is in the Big Ten, Michigan at Minnesota. Minnesota's getting 5.5 points at home, the total being 131. This is a Thursday night matchup. Looks like you like Minnesota, and I got to concur with this one. Minnesota is playing really good basketball right now. They've kind of been a high riser. They're at 46 in KenPom now. Looks like they've basically improved across the board on both defense and offense.
Yep.
So what specifically? You've got a couple players you're calling out here.
Yeah, I've been watching them play recently, and Minnesota has been ticking up in my mind. Amir Coffey, the junior guy, and Jordan Murphy, their senior big man, have been dominant in the paint. Murphy grabs every rebound around him, and he is playing solid defense in the paint. And I think that he matches up really well against this Michigan interior front. And Minnesota playing at home, I've talked the last few weeks about how Michigan's offense has been downgraded in my mind. They're now 35th in adjusted offensive efficiency. And as you mentioned, Minnesota's defense has been picking up. So they're going to get 5.5 points at home on Thursday night. And I think they're going to view this as a must win to get back in that tournament picture as well against a solid Michigan team. And I'm going to take the points with the Golden Gophers.
Yeah, it should be noted Michigan's just 3-3 on the road in the last six, so against the spread, so I like that a lot. The next one, look at you, the Toreros again. Portland at the Toreros, 21-point favorites at home for Thursday. So it looks like you just don't like Portland, or you didn't, or you just love the Toreros again.
Well, this one's mostly a fade of the Portland team. This is a god-awful basketball team. They just lose games left and right. They have the 328th ranked offense, and San Diego plays defense, as we noted, against Gonzaga. And I think this team is just going to run them out of the gym. I'm looking at the spread being about 21 points, and the last time these two teams faced off in Portland, San Diego won by 27. So I expect this one to be a similar outcome and San Diego to run away with this game and cover the number easy.
That's awesome. Go Toreros. The next one you've got in the Ivy League, you're going spraying all fields here. There's no conference left unturned for this guy. Dartmouth at Yale. Yale is a 12-point favorite at home, but you're looking at the total. It's 148, which isn't a low total. You're looking for the over, and that's a Friday night action.
Yeah, Friday night special. I've been watching these Ivy League totals and final scores the last few weeks, and scoring is up in the Ivy League, I tell you, Wags.
Okay.
And specifically, this Yale Bulldog team has a very legit offense. They're ranked 90th in offensive efficiency, and they're going against the defense in Dartmouth that's 281. So I think Yale's going to have some success on offense. And Dartmouth doesn't have a bad offense themselves. They can shoot the three at a pretty efficient clip, 25th in three-point shooting efficiency.
That's good.
So I expect there to be lots of points in this game. And the last time these two teams played, they went off for 157. So I'm looking for another similar outcome in game two. And I think this one goes over 148.
Sounds like a good handicap, and we always love the Friday night action. The next one is, well, we both picked this one out, Kansas at Texas Tech. Texas Tech is a 4.5-point favorite at home. The total is 132, and this is a Saturday night matchup. We both like Texas Tech for a couple reasons. KU is, you know, 1-3 on the road against the spread. Texas Tech is 4-2 at home against the spread. They're also, you know, first in defense, as you already talked about. I just don't like this Kansas team, especially outside of Allen Fieldhouse. I mean, you talked about the injuries and the departures. So, I mean, what else can we say about this game?
Well, I'm right there with you. I think that Texas Tech has had a hard time covering numbers, mostly because their offense has been so poor. But looking at this game coming out under five, likely to be a 4.5-point spread with Texas Tech, I think it's a little bit more manageable. And they're going to look at this game with some serious revenge after having lost at Allen Fieldhouse in the first game. And Texas Tech is vying for that Big 12 title as well.
Yep.
And they see Kansas as the big dog, and they're going to get up for this game on Saturday and likely cover. I'm with you.
Yeah, you got to beat the man to be the man, right? The next one, I guess we're both on this one. Virginia is going to Louisville. Virginia is laying 3.5 points on the road. The total is 124. It's another Saturday game. And it's, to me, might be a different handicap for you, but to me, Virginia is just, they're actually really good on the road. They're 5-2 on the road in their last seven, and actually not so good at home. I think it's just because they usually get more points or they have shorter numbers on the road. And really, their game is basically the same whether it's on the road or at home. And like you had said before about Louisville, they are struggling. They're definitely struggling with pressure defense. And of course, you know, Virginia is one of the best defensive teams in the country. What else do you have on that game?
Yeah, I think that you've pointed out Virginia's prowess on the road this year. It seems like every time they go on the road, they win games and cover numbers. And again, similar to the Texas Tech handicap, I think that's probably because you're getting shorter numbers on the road because Virginia doesn't have a stellar offense, although Kyle Guy has been shooting the ball lights out, and you got Ty Jerome on the perimeter as well who can shoot it. But going on the road and only laying 3.5 at Louisville, I think, is something that they could manage. It's a bad matchup for the Cardinals, and I think Louisville can be taken down pretty easily.
All right. We're on that side. We'll save the rest for the head-to-head. Let's talk a little bit about the NBA All-Star Weekend. First and foremost, you won some money.
Yeah, Saturday night, I was sitting around at the bar and looking up, and I saw Joe Harris warming up and was checking odds. And I remembered that he's the second highest 3-point percentage shooter in the NBA and saw he was 7-1. So I figured I'd throw a few shekels down on Harris.
Nice.
And sure enough, he outlasted Steph Curry and won the title.
He did. He took it down. Plus 700 for you. We talked about Diallo last week. He was the big winner, plus 300.
How about Diallo with the dunk over Shaq? That was incredible.
With the elbow in the rim. I mean, you know, I know you used to be able to do that action.
Yeah, right. With a peach, maybe.
The peach, right. No, it was interesting. I didn't really watch much of it. I saw the highlights. I try to stay away from All-Star Weekend for the most part. I did realize when we were, I was at the bar on Sunday, and man, the pregame for the All-Star game was like 2.5 hours long.
Oh, really?
It was insane.
I missed that. I did catch part of the game, and obviously I had mentioned the under over last week, and that teams went out and were shooting lights out from the three-point line. I think I read it was a record number of three-point attempts in the game, and they also shot close to 50%, and obviously the game went flying over that total of 316.
Yeah, plus your Giannis, they were destroying him in the first half, and then they just got housed in the second half. They gave up like 95 points in the second half or something.
I was able to cash a live ticket on LeBron on the money line, plus 195, I think. So it turned out okay. Didn't lose too much on the game itself.
Attaboy. You're mentioning that in the NBA, we are going to have started tank season, tankapalooza, whatever you want to call it. There's definitely some teams that are vying for that number one pick, trying to get Zion Williamson. Dying from Zion. There you go. And who you got here? You got the Knicks, Cleveland, and Phoenix, huh?
Yeah, these are the three poorest records in the NBA. The Knicks are 11-47, Cleveland's 12-46, and Phoenix won't be outdone at 11-48. Wow. And these three teams are going to be losing left, right, and center. I'm going to keep an eyeball on them to see how their performance looks night over night. I think they'll probably be selective with their tanking. So the key is going to be to pick out those spots where you think they're going to be a little bit less motivated to show up.
That's right. I also heard that odds on Zion Williamson to be the number one pick is minus 2,000 right now.
Wow, I would lay that all day, no doubt.
All right, well, let's go to the NHL and the first period overs. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I was able to spend some time looking into this a little bit more and kind of updating my numbers, looking at my spreadsheet a little bit. And these top five, Follow the Money Five, and the sixth added New Jersey Devils have been tearing still lately. Wow. The Blackhawks are continuing to roll at 78% over on the season.
Incredible.
Tampa, Columbus, and San Jose are all about 70%. Pittsburgh has dropped off a little bit down to 63%. And the New Jersey Devils are in the mix now, hitting the over at 64%. And I did want to touch on the score last night out over here at the United Center, where the Blackhawks and the Senators combined for 9 goals in the first period, as the Hawks led 5-4 at the end of the first intermission.
It's you should get like double your money or something if they double they like tripled it, right?
That's, well, the VIG was minus 220, and I certainly stayed away from that, but I'm sure there are people who took it as well.
So which spots are you eyeing for this particular bet this week?
So there's a couple that I've lined up for this week, and specifically I wanted to mention too that when the Follow the Money top six go head to head this season, the over in that first period has been 55-6. Jeez. Which is 90%.
That's winning.
When you look at these two teams playing against each other, there's a couple of those instances this week, and both involve San Jose. I want to start out first by mentioning Wednesday, Chicago goes on the road at Detroit, and expecting the outcome to be at minus 149. So if I see any number that comes out lower than that, I'm going to jump on it.
That's cheap for this group.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, Detroit has been a little bit lower scoring in their first periods. So that's the reason that you're getting a little bit of a discount there. Thursday night, there's two matchups. The first one being two of the Follow the Money Six, San Jose and Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. are playing, and expecting that vig to be about 203.
Okay.
May open up a little bit higher than that, so it's unlikely you'll find that at 200 or less, but you never know.
Mm-hmm.
The next spot is the aforementioned Ottawa Senators going on the road to New Jersey, and I'm expecting that vig to be minus 171. So I think you may find some value there, likely to be closer to 140, 145 range, where you can get some value on that one.
Okay.
And then the last spot is the big whopper of the weekend. Saturday night, San Jose visits Columbus.
Wow.
These two teams have combined for a ton of overs. San Jose is way up there, as well as Columbus, both over 60% to the over. And this one I'm expecting to be 241 expected outcome.
That is a big number.
I doubt that any book is going to get that high, so you may get some value laying that number with that game Saturday night.
Okay, that's good to know.
One other NHL note I wanted to pick out is the St. Louis Blues on a ridiculous tear.
Yeah.
10-0 in their last 10 games straight up.
Wow.
And they've covered the puck line, the 1.5 pucks, meaning they've covered 1.5 goals, 8-2 in those last 10 games.
They're on a tear.
Usually in hockey, if you're laying 1.5 pucks, you're getting pretty good plus money. So if you're betting those St. Louis Blues in the past 10 games, you've made a killing.
Nice. Good to know. I mean, maybe I got to do an NHL after this last college basketball stint.
Change it up a little bit.
That's right. All right, we're going to touch on one of Action's favorite sports. It's been a while. The Champions League, it is back. You got some Wednesday night action in the Champions League.
Yeah, so Champions League round of 16 started last week, and this is the European Cup, as we touched on early on in the side action shows. And this format is a bit different, where it's called the knockout round, and two teams play a home and away split, two game series, and the aggregate score totaled up over the series wins and advances to the next round.
Okay, a little unique.
So it's very unique, especially for us American sports fans. It's weird to add two game scores together
right.
to find an outcome. But if there is a tie after both games, there is a little caveat that the team with the most away goals advances to the next round.
Mm.
And if they're still tied with the same number of away goals, then they'll go into extra time and play a penalty shootout like you normally see in tournament formats.
Interesting. All right.
So one game that I'm looking forward to tomorrow afternoon is my Juventus squad.
That's your squad?
Going on the road to Madrid to face off against Atletico Madrid out of the Spanish league.
Okay.
And Juventus are minus 205 favorites to advance out of this tie, and Atletico Madrid are the underdogs at plus 175.
Mm.
Now, if you bet that, that means you're betting on one team or other to advance to that round of eight.
So through the two games, right?
Yeah, so that would be the two-game bet. And then specifically for tomorrow's match at the Wanda Metropolitano, which is also the site of this year's final WEGs later this summer. Juventus are plus money favorites on the road at plus 180, and Atletico are plus 190 to win the game, and the draw is a very slim plus 200.
So is it common to have both teams plus money? Is that right? Is that
what this is what would be called a three-way line.
Huh.
So if you're betting one of these three outcomes, you have to hit that specific outcome to win the game. So if you're taking that plus 190 with Atletico, for example, they have to win for you to win money.
Makes sense.
You can take the what's called draw no bet or pick 'em line, in which case, if it was a draw, you would just get your money back. And Juventus is a minus 115 favorite there, and Atletico is minus 105.
Okay.
So a little bit more even. I mean, these odds kind of tell you it's going to be a very even game.
Yeah, close game.
And what I'm reading in this odds even more is that it's likely going to be very low scoring. The total reflects that, with this match total set at two. And this is actually the angle that I'm going to play tomorrow. I'm going to play this under the total at two goals, minus 115. And the reason being because Atletico Madrid is one of the most defensive teams in Europe.
I gotcha.
They set up and sit back, and they have great defenders with Godin in the middle and a couple of center backs that can just be stout and resolute in the back. Mm-hmm. And to add to that, the first leg of these knockout games are usually much tighter and slower paced, and the teams kind of sit back because they don't extend themselves a little bit too far. Mm-hmm. If they give up a few goals in the first leg, then they have no chance in the second game.
Sure.
So I expect this one to be really low scoring, and in fact, both of today's games ended 0-0 between Barcelona and Olympique Lyonnais and Bayern Munich and Liverpool. Zeros across the board. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that same outcome tomorrow. And worst case scenario, you get a 1-1 draw and you push and get your money back.
Okay. All right. There you go. There's the soccer take. I tell you, is there another game you were going to talk about?
Just wanted to mention the other game tomorrow is Manchester City playing host to Schalke from the German league.
Okay.
And this one is a huge mismatch. Mm. Man City are -350 favorites at home to win this game tomorrow.
Yeah,
so
that's a much bigger number.
No action there for me.
Okay. Good to know. Soccer's back, everybody. Action's happy.
I know you all missed it.
You should see the smile on this guy's face. Okay, well, let's go into the head-to-head. It is going to be all college basketball again. We'll start off with, the big game, huh? The big game of the week. You know, everybody says that these are the two highest-rated college basketball games of the year. It's North Carolina's going to Duke. This is going to be Wednesday night. Duke are 9.5-point favorites. I'm sorry to make this a very simple thing, but I think Duke is just, basically, they're better. They're better than North Carolina. They're better than everybody, as you see in your index. When you compare these teams, I mean, Duke is third best offense, the fourth best defense. I mean, you can't say much more than that. North Carolina, they're a pretty good offensive team, and it's at seventh, but they're 20th on defense. And I think when push comes to shove, Duke always shows up in these big spots. They've been doing it across the board. 9.5 is a big number, but they are at home. And I just think Zion and the group is going to take care of business against the Tar Heels.
So would you say that you're lay on the points with Zion?
I would never say that, ever.
All right. Bad joke. Well, I think that you're clearly on the wrong side here.
Okay.
Obviously, I had posted North Carolina +9.5 in the write-up.
I know.
And newly minted number one Duke. Mm-hmm. We're going to host their Tobacco Road rivals Wednesday night. And obviously, I agree with you. Duke is the better team.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why we have handicaps in sports.
That's right.
And this is a historical outlier. North Carolina is never getting close to 10 points on the road.
Never.
To anyone. I know this Duke team is probably one of the best teams we've seen in the last decade outside of that Kentucky team years ago. But North Carolina is no slouch, and they've been playing really well lately. Before losing last Monday night to Virginia and the non-cover against Miami, they'd rattled off 5 straight ATS wins, including wins over Virginia Tech against Louisville on the road and at home versus NC State. And I think that North Carolina has the athletes that are going to be able to hang with this Duke team led by Kobe White, the freshman, and the fellow freshman Nasir Little. I know he did sit out the last game, but was reading he's expected to play this week against Duke. And they're going to have a pretty big edge on the glass, too, ironically, and an edge at the free throw line. They shoot 74% at the line, and Duke is only 68.3. So that's really my edge in this game. I think it's going to be tight at the end, and they're going to be fouling, sending Duke to the line, and that 68.3% free throw shooting is not going to cut it, and North Carolina is going to come away with a squeaker.
Mm-hmm. Now, you did put another note that you didn't mention, that these last 4 years that basically these games are always within 10 points. They're always really close, actually. So it is against my handicap, but I think this is the outlier year, and they're definitely at home. So we'll see what happens.
Can't wait to watch.
Absolutely. The next game is Utah. They're at Washington. Washington are 9.5-point favorites at home. You know I love the Huskies. I'm all over the Huskies. I was all over them in the football season, too. Hopefully they come through. What do you got for Utah? Because you're definitely taking Utah in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take the nearly double-digit underdog in this one, too. It looks like the night-ahead number is Utah +9.5. And I'm going to take the 9.5 points here. I think this Utah team has been picking it up as of late.
Okay.
Their adjusted offense is up to 21st ranked in the nation. And I know that Washington plays pretty stout D, and they have been playing great defense, but they've tailed off a little bit in the last week or so.
They have.
They lost that game at Arizona State and then had another non-cover as well. And really, I think the bigger part of my handicap is just going against this Washington offense.
Okay.
I don't think they have enough firepower to win a game by 9.5 points, and that's the reason I'm taking them here.
Okay. You know, to be honest with you, I don't know where the Utes are in KenPom. I don't know where they are in the number. I had a hard time finding them.
So, small dig there.
Little dig. Larry Kustowiak, the coach, had a good team last year. They're not the same squad. Washington, I don't know if they've played this year yet. That would be the only caveat, I would say. I think Washington's going to have trouble when they face their teams the second time, if they face them a second time in Pac-12 play. But with Utah, they just haven't had a great year. I don't know what you said, that they're playing better, perhaps. Washington, it is a big number, but they're going to play that zone. They're going to pack it in. If Utah can't make good shots and penetrate that zone, Washington's going to take them down. And I think that with the two-game skid, I'm hoping that the coaching staff can kind of refocus this squad to finish out the conference season, because Washington may be the only team from the Pac-12 to make the tournament. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll lay those 9.5 and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
The next game is Duke at Syracuse. It's a Saturday tilt. Duke is a 13-point favorite on the road at Syracuse. You know I'm going with Duke again. I kick myself because I always kind of hated Duke in some ways. I mean, I love Coach K. He's Polish and all. I can't pronounce his name because he's Polish. And I met the guy once. I told you that.
Oh, really?
I met Coach K. Yeah, really, really great guy at a Polish-American Alliance here, event here in Chicago. But he's got this team playing great basketball, and my main handicap for this is the revenge factor. Syracuse went into Duke, beat them at Duke, which was a total shocker. Again, that was without their point guard. So I think that that's – with those two elements, they've got Trey Jones back, and they also are going to be on the road looking – breathing fire. In some ways, it's a letdown spot playing after North Carolina, but with Syracuse – having them beaten them earlier in the year, I think that they're going to be up for this game and they're going to take out the Cuse.
Okay, well, I think you mentioned we had grading this game at 13. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if you recall, I think you mentioned it, that Syracuse did beat Duke last time out at Cameron, which was probably the most surprising outcome of any game this season.
Absolutely.
And I think that this Syracuse team just matches up stylistically well to suit Duke. We all know that Duke does not shoot well from the perimeter. I think they're near the bottom three-point percentage, 304th. And obviously, to go against Syracuse's zone, you're going to have to be able to hit some outside shots. And I think in the first meeting, the Syracuse D proved that they can limit the inside touches a little bit. Although Duke did score 91 points. and I think we had mentioned at the time that they really did miss Trey Jones. Mm-hmm. And I will admit that kind of got Duke out of the offensive flow a little bit. And they missed his ball pressure, too, I think was the more important factor. Right. But Syracuse catching 13 points at home, they're going to get up for this Duke team on a Saturday night. And I think they're going to be able to keep this game close. It may come down to the free throws at the end. But again, I'll mention Duke is horrible at shooting free throws. And it's hard to back a team when they can't shoot free throws.
That's true. And I'm looking at, since you pulled up the schedule, I can see it here. That was definitely the Syracuse's highest output of the year with 95 points.
Oh, yeah, hands down.
It looks like they haven't scored over 70 points in the month of February. So that's going to help my handicap, too. But, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. I think, you know, basically Syracuse is going to have to play their style. We're going to grind them down, and hopefully Duke misses a lot of shots. But I'm thinking they're going to try to pick up the tempo like they did last time, and I don't see Syracuse scoring 95 points again. But.
No, I think it would certainly be a much lower scoring game than that. In fact, I might look at the under if this game comes out. Like we've mentioned on podcasts previous, Duke has historically high totals all season long, and they've been going under. So
they have.
I'll be looking at that as well.
The last one is in the Big Ten, Michigan State at Michigan. You know, big battle in the up north here. Michigan's a 2.5-point favorite at home. At least that's how we're grading it. What do you say about this one, Action?
Yeah, I think you and I talked before this. We had a hard time picking out a line here, mainly due to the Nick Ward injury. My numbers have Michigan State rated about 4 points better on a neutral court. So I think with losing Nick Ward, we're going to grade this Michigan -2.5. And I'm going to be playing the home team here specifically because of the situational spot. Michigan does have that tough road game on Thursday night against Minnesota, and I think that these two games are going to play hand in hand a little bit. I expect them to look ahead a little bit against Minnesota, more to this Michigan State game. These two teams are tied atop the Big Ten standings, and this game is going to go a long way in deciding the outcome of the Big Ten regular season champion. And I think that Michigan is going to get up the loss of Nick Ward is going to be massive, and John Teschke and Brazdeikis on the inside should be able to make some hay, and hopefully Jordan Poole and Livers can get hot from the outside and cover this number and win the game by three.
Okay, if it is the small number, it's going to be tough for Sparty, but I think that Sparty's going to rally now that they have both those losses of Langford and Ward. Izzo's going to actually really have to coach this squad, and I think they're actually going to listen to him this time. And like you said, these two teams are actually going to play twice in the next couple weeks, so it will determine the Big Ten title. But to me, Michigan State is, you know, Michigan's a great defensive team, but their offense is kind of garbage. They can't make shots. They can't create shots. And Sparty is, they play that tough defense too. I mean, they're getting it done. I mean, they're fourth in KenPom overall, but they're in the top 10 in both offense and defense of efficiency. So, sure, loss of Ward's going to hurt them both on the glass and probably scoring the ball since he was a second leading scorer. But that just means that Winston's going to step up and some of these other guys need to hit some shots. And you know that they've got other dudes on the bench. I just haven't watched them all year. I'm sure they got some other big dude who come in can come in and get some boards. So I do like that Sparty's going to be an underdog on the road. And if it's 2.5, I'll definitely take Sparty there.
Yeah, that one should be another great game on Saturday. Or Sunday, rather.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Side Action. You know, thanks for joining us. It's really exciting. We've got some big plans ahead. We've been talking about doing a couple of events. We're definitely going to do an event the first day of the tournament. We just have to pick the venue. It'll be a morning event prior to the first grouping of games for the NCAA tournament, and that will be March 21st. We're also talking about doing something for the Big Ten tournament, potentially an evening tilt at a bar. Maybe not the first day of the tournament, but maybe the second one, like on a Thursday. We're targeting the 14th, right?
Yeah, I think that sounds right, March 14th.
March 14th. Yep. So those are 2 weeks in a row on Thursdays that we will let everybody know where we're going to be at. We'd love to have people join us out there, get a few beers, and you know, we're going to figure out how to do the streaming thing on either Facebook Live or some sort of streaming venue so you guys can be part of the action, which is exciting.
Yeah, make sure to put in those PTO requests early.
That's right.
I know a lot of supervisors may not allow you to leave work and watch NCAA basketball games. I, for one, have been doing it for years, so it's kind of built into my calendar.
That's right.
But no, really appreciate all you listeners and would really like to get out here in Chicagoland and meet a lot of you in person and talk about college basketball and other sport handicapping as well.
That's right. The last plug I'll make is Weggs Pool originally came out as a pool. It's a pool for the NCAA tournament.
Not a swimming pool.
Not a swimming pool. I'm not a good swimmer, if you read the Dating Post. No, I'm doing that, of course. I do it every year. I have about 150 people join. Action's in there every year trying to win some cash, and it's a good time. If you lose, you got to wear the shirt, and then you represent the Weggs Pool and the Avatar. So you're up there for a year. Thanks, Jen Hoffman. So, you know, you guys obviously will be welcome to join the pool as well. We always want more people, and I'll do an event as well at the end of the month where we'll kind of watch the Sweet 16 together for the pool. So lots of activity in March. We're ready for March Madness.
We're also trying to line up some guests going through March, too, to talk about other ways that you can gamble on March Madness. It's obviously a three-week event that everybody in the nation loves, and I know Weggs has got some invented waves. We might have a guest coming on to talk about second half wagers.
We love that.
We can talk about some Calcuttas and other strategy that you can get some money down for March Madness. So my favorite month of the year.
That's right. It's definitely my favorite too. So, well, thanks everybody for joining us. Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Follow me at Weggs Pool on Twitter and Instagram.
Follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
All right. We'll check in next week.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.